Internet.
Hey, Internet!
It's me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
What just happened?
Did you get a haircut today?
What did you just do? What are you doing right now?
I'm you.
Hi. Hey, the Internet. You're listening to Steamboat Wookiee, the official, unofficial Disney Star Wars podcast. My name is Ben Wendt.
Attack of the clones!
I'm being attacked by a clone who is actually my co-host.
Obi-Wan Kenobi!
That's not your name!
Chaz Kaufman. How's it going?
And?
Emmy Panzeca.
What are you doing, you goofball? Hey, guys. Hope it's going well. As promised, we're doing everything we can to keep up to our new schedule of releasing a new episode every other Thursday. As I just said, we are Steamboat Wookiee, the official, unofficial Disney Star Wars podcast. Unofficial in the sense that we are in no way licensed by Disney. Please don't sue us. We're all poor. What have you guys been up to the last week and a half since I saw you? You guys see any new movies or anything?
Being poor, but also we get to see the new Doctor Strange.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
I have yet to see
it. That's Disney relevant. Okay, so Emmy, you haven't seen it yet. So then, Chaz, avoiding spoilers more or less, or Emmy, you can just plug your ears and go, nah, 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 nah. What did you think of Doctor Strange?
Visually, and I did see it in 3D. I do recommend seeing the 3D version because the visuals are very spectacular. A lot of the moments where it isn't trying to do the Marvel formula, like, it's amazing to look at and just seeing all the magic. That being said, I just felt like they just didn't quite put their heart in towards, like, the third act and kind of the villains, but I feel like that's a lot of them. Like, they want to introduce the characters, but they're not so worried about the villains.
I feel like that might be the most common recurring sin of first installments of Marvel movies, is that the third act doesn't tend to have quite the sparkle as the first two acts. I would argue this is the best origin story since Iron Man. Mm-hmm. I think that...
It's got similar beats.
Wow, it's that good.
It really has very similar beats. Mm-hmm. It makes you care about this character in a really cool way. I think he's well acted.
Yeah.
The visuals are incredible. I saw it once in 2D and once again in 3D. I would recommend seeing it in 3D.
The magic
at Screenland Armor in North Kansas City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Support local theaters.
But seriously, it's good stuff. What were you saying, Chaz?
Oh, I was just saying, it just where it tries to avoid beats. They try to introduce a love interest, but even they're like, it's not really what you think it is.
Yes.
Mentors, villains, like it's setting up things. I'll be curious to see what the next installment has.
But yeah, ultimately, my quick elevator review of it would be that it was well acted, well directed, visually incredibly stunning, and without spoiling too much, I am very excited now for Thor 3 Ragnarok. I do think that movie's going to rule.
That should be fun.
Have you guys seen the live-action Beauty and the Beast trailer?
Yes! Yeah. I am so...
Can we talk about
yes,
it?
Yes, please. Emmy. I am beyond excited. I love Emma Watson. I mean...
She's fantastic.
The Harry
I love
Potter
her.
Fan in me is just like... And, you know, the feminist in me. I adore Emma Watson. She is a flawless human being.
Yes,
I cannot
just
wait.
An exceptional standard as far as people and actresses go.
Yeah. Well, and I'm excited, too, because Beauty and the Beast is like... going to be kind of a part of a family thing I'm marrying into, which is interesting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, yes, that's right.
My fiance, his aunt is the original voice of Belle, Paige O'Hara.
Yep.
That's right.
I have yet to meet, but she actually does artwork and she's
a very lovely person. I
hear she's really cool and her artwork is on,
I hear
in
that
their
too.
House.
Just now.
she does like actual artwork, like it's all over their house. It's really fantastic.
That's awesome. I feel like the only negative thing I have to say about the trailer, and this could easily be me overreacting to something too quick because I haven't seen that much.
Yeah.
Gaston does not have the
swagger.
Lovable swagger, over-the-top misogyny that I love from the animated film.
True,
I love to hate Gaston.
We all
and every last inch of me is covered with hair. Yeah, it's that
five dozen
this
names.
Character instead just looks hateable. And I'm going to go into it with an open mind and an open heart. Yeah. And I love being proven wrong about things like this. I love things. But
I almost like didn't even notice Gaston.
Yeah. I agree.
Luke Evans is one of those very kind of square jaw, very bland kind of brunette handsome.
Mm-hmm. And you can also argue that Gaston's like a super, super important part of Beauty and the Beast. Absolutely. Not even argue, like he is. Like he just is. If you don't think he's important to the plot, then you're like,
it's what makes that movie really stand out from a lot of those other golden age Disney princess films, is that we actually get to see Belle choose between two different men. Mm. There are two different men in her life, and they represent her things, and they both have ugliness in them in different ways, and it's interesting because the Beast is ugly on the outside and beautiful on the inside, and Gaston is beautiful on the outside and ugly on the inside, and they're wonderful foils for one another, and I just hope that that comes through in a fun, comedic way, because that is one of my favorite elements of Beauty and the Beast.
And he represents a very toxic masculinity that we've seen now, where he's very much... man needs to marry woman. Woman bury children for him.
Fire hot. Yeah.
Gaston muscles.
Sure. So that's my one thing I had about that. I do think a lot of the characters look really cool. My favorite character from the original Beauty and the Beast is Lumiere, and I do think that he looks dope in the new trailer. I'm very excited. I want to be clear. It's Ewan McGregor?
Are you kidding?
I don't think I realized that.
I had no idea.
Ewan McGregor and Ian McKellen is Cogsworth.
Didn't you play Lumiere in high school? I did. And he was always my favorite growing up.
That was like a dream come true, and
I got to play him in high school. I am very excited for this movie. I don't want my hesitation about Gaston to color the overall. I just did want to throw that out in the universe. Anything else about Beauty and the Beast before we move on to some Star Wars business? Chaz.
Love some Jerry Orbach.
I know.
I think you were saying the
CG. Pour one on the floor for our homie.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's on the MacBook.
No.
Oh,
not again. Anyway. I'm a big fan of Jerry Orbach from the original one. I just have to see how the CGI works for me. The look of it, very polished. Everything else looks lovely. Posters, everything else. I'm not sure if I the way that they've made all of the China, like Chip and Mrs. Cogsworth, like where the faces...
It will be interesting.
It's like a China pattern on the face instead. So
something
you
always got to look out, and you know this, of course, as someone who's in animation, that in early drafts of things, you've always got to, in trailers, you've got to be a little bit more forgiving, because I remember the CGI for that first Jurassic World trailer did not look great. Mm-hmm. By the time the movie came out, it looked pretty darn good.
Yeah. Like, it makes... logic, like aesthetically, why they did that.
Yes.
I just don't know as far as like learning to love these characters based on those designs.
It might cause some distance. I'm curious. Yeah. But ultimately, I think we all agree it looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And while I was originally a little bit cynical about the idea of remaking all of these beloved Golden Age films as live action films, so far, they're off to a pretty good start. I kind of hope maybe that we're going to see like sort of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I hope that we see like the Avengers of the Disney princesses.
Yes.
I hope that like they are secretly building up to that, and that we get Belle and Jasmine and Cinderella.
I was thinking you mean the other way around, because the new Iron Man is a girl.
Oh, sure. Oh, no, they just completely combine, and it's just like the Avengers legitimately one for one get replaced by the Avengers.
Yeah, Miss Marvel.
Rapunzel is Thor. That hair. Yeah, I could see that. So have you guys seen this new Rogue One 360 experience?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Chaz shared this with me. Mm-hmm. I have not yet experienced it in Google Cardboard. I am very much anticipating that. My brother Nate, who I'm sure will co-host this podcast at some point in time, he owns a Google Cardboard set, and I can't wait to watch it. But it's great.
Fantastic.
Everything that comes out with Rogue One makes me more and more excited for it.
Yeah.
But finally using this 360 and I've seen them where they've been fun and they've been very amusing, but that's the first one where it's like that was
legitimately cool.
Yeah, exciting, like being caught in the middle of a battle like that. And
we're starting to get a hand of it. Yeah, like we're like, okay, we know what this technology can do. Let's actually augment some reality.
So have we still all been on the same page of like putting our blinders on for this one?
I have avoided as many spoilers as possible.
I have not looked at
the other day when
I
saw Doctor Strange in 3D. A Rogue One trailer played, and I saw it with my buddy Matt, who will I also guess host this podcast sometime soon, actually. He's got Shotgun on episode 3, by the way. Okay. Matt, I know you're listening. We love you, buddy. So
no,
I turned to him and I said, oh my gosh, a new Rogue One trailer. And he goes, this has been out since like August. And that's how much my blinders have been on about it, that I've only seen maybe 2 or 3 of the trailers. Mm-hmm. And I was very excited by some of the stuff I saw.
Yeah.
That was, I think maybe Chaz at one point had referenced some stuff about her dad that I had never heard, and I think it maybe was that trailer. I finally saw that.
That's
like 3 podcast episodes ago.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's how much I've put on the blinders. I'm excited. I know it's not Disney or Star Wars, but Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them comes out tonight.
I'm so excited
to see that. My blinders will finally be down.
Yes.
And new Pokemon. It's a good time to be alive, people.
It really is.
You know what? The election's over. We're moving forward. There's good stuff coming. Just smile. And
yeah, I was telling you about it. The Nintendo
Classic.
Whistle
while you work. Yeah. So we are now entering the Clone Wars. This is a big, epic portion of Star Wars canon, and it's going to be a big, hopefully enjoyable portion of our podcast. Begun. The Clone War has, Yoda said. That's how episode 2 ends. That's how this whole thing begins. So I just want to say really quick, some housekeeping. We are going to go for a bit of a new format as we're moving through here. We know that the 7 live-action Star Wars movies, soon to be 8 when Rogue One comes out, are definitely the most accessed and most accessible entries into proper Disney Star Wars canon. Mm-hmm. We respect that. But we want to hold on to listeners. We want to be the podcast that watches and reads and listens to the stuff that you might not have time for or don't feel like doing or don't want to revisit. And we also want to be the podcast that tells you, hey, this is totally worth checking out if you haven't yet. Mm-hmm. So think of this as we go through the Clone Wars. Don't think of this, please keep listening to this. Please keep telling your friends. Don't think of this as, I haven't seen the Clone Wars, why should I listen to this? Think of this as, I haven't seen the Clone Wars, so it's good that I'm listening to this, because now I know what happens in between episodes 2 and 3.
It's not just the extended universe, it's the enriching of the universe.
Yes. It really, truly does, and we'll get into that today, and that's all we're going to be talking about for several weeks.
If anything, our goal here is to fill in those blanks for the people that have only seen the live
action. Exactly, and I think that was the goal of Dave Filoni and the Clone Wars team.
Yeah.
So that I just wanted to get that out of the way. We will be talking about the Clone Wars movie today, and we will be talking about the Clone Wars series moving forward. We're going to do a couple episodes at a time per podcast episode. We don't want to draw this out forever, but we just wanted to throw that out there. Please stick with us. We're going to do everything we can to make this fun and entertaining for you, because we want to create Star Wars fans. That's probably the ultimate goal of this podcast, is to create Star Wars fans. Please don't feel like this podcast isn't for you just because you're not as nerdy as I am, because you're never going to be, okay? And that's a good thing, doll. I'm looking at you.
We'd like to see you try.
That's right, Travis. Do we have any listeners named Travis?
I hope
I just made one guy go, what?
We have a Trevor. Shout out to
we
Trevor.
We do. Yeah, Trevor!
Shout out to Trevor.
This is for you, Trevor. All right, everybody. So now it is time to play everybody's favorite game, Who Dat Droid? All right, so we keep Who Dat Droid going as a running score. The current score is guest host, 3 points. Emmy in the lead with 4 points. And Chaz with 3 points. Who Dat Droid is the game where I name droids, aliens, species, specific Star Wars characters, and ask for you to either name who they are, what they are, etc. So, luckily, 2008's Clone Wars animated film has quite a bit of material for me. So, we've got a handful of questions to go through here, and I think this is going to be a fun one. And because we don't have a guest host, you guys have a chance to really rally the score up, okay? I don't know if it'll happen or not, but we'll see. I did love in that last episode that Chaz did a really great job with the beasts at the Colosseum. He finally got on the board and is now even. So, Emmy, you can crush him.
I'm ready.
All right. There are, this is possible 2 points. Oh, and we always use homemade buzzers. Who are you guys buzzing in as?
Same as always.
Yep.
All right, so we got Chewbacca from Chaz. And Emmy,
we got
Jawa. All right. There are 2. So this is a possible 2-pointer. If you buzz in first, you get 2. There are 2 very famous clones, both mentioned by name in Clone Wars 2008. Who are they? Chaz.
Commander Cody and Rex.
Oh, snap! Wow. All right. Chaz, pulling ahead. 5 points now.
The Adventures of Commander Cody and Rex.
No. All right. There is a character in Clone Wars that I hate. A Truman Capote sounding Hutt, who we will really get into. What is his name?
Damn it.
A Hutt, you said?
Yes.
Zero?
Zero the Hutt, Emmy. So, all right, we're at 5-5. All right.
Woo.
We are introduced to one of the greatest characters in the history of Star Wars canon in 2008's Clone Wars film, Ahsoka Tano. What species is she? Three, two, one. Togruta!
Oh, my God.
All right. In this film, there is a Huttling, Jabba the Hutt's son, Zero the Hutt's great-nephew. What is his proper first name? It is not Stinky.
Oh, no.
Three, two, one.
Oh, no.
Rhoda the Hutt.
Rhoda.
Oh, my God. They say it, like, never. Like,
they only,
once.
I think they only say it one time
in
the actual
like, Rhoda
film.
Rhoda the Hutt has
yes,
been kidnapped.
Yes, exactly, well, exactly. All right. So you guys are at 5-5. Guest is going to finally come in from behind at 3 for this next episode. We do have one last question. There is a pink astromech droid who has a very touching story that I'm about to dive into. What is that astromech droid's name? Chaz.
R2KT.
R2KT for Chaz. Finally, for the first time ever, taking the lead. 6 points, Chaz. 5 points, Emmy. 3 points, guest host. All right. So, for those of you who do not know, there is a pink astromech droid who appears occasionally in, really throughout quite a bit of Star Wars canon and even Star Wars non-canon, like the Lego Star Wars stuff. She is actually created after a real-life girl named Katie Johnson, who was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, and she was a huge Star Wars fan, and she, when her health declined, she actually said that she wished that she had a droid to watch over her, like R2-D2 watched over Padme while she slept in Attack of the Clones, which is just, like, beautiful and amazing, and kudos to the Star Wars people for actually making her officially canon. R2-KT, next time you see that pink droid, a little tear's gonna appear in your eye. Instead of you being a little snooty, like, why is there a pink one? You're gonna be like, I'm so good. Pink one.
That is so
yeah.
All about the
right?
Fans.
Right?
Pour one out from a fan.
Yeah. So there we go. Wow. Now it is time to move on to 2008's animated, the only official theatrical released full-length animated Star Wars film. Mm-hmm. To date, there are 8 films. The 9th film will be Rogue One. I know that a lot of people like to think there's only 7 because it's Episode 7 is the most recent theatrical release. There are 8. Currently, Rogue One will be the 9th. Yep. So, with that in mind, without having seen Rogue One, where do you guys stack your official Star Wars theatrical released movie power rankings? How do you rank them from worst to first?
It depends on what mood I'm in, but usually the second and the third episodes, Revenge of the Sith and Attack of the Clones, usually rank on my bottom, then followed by The Phantom Menace. Are we trying to include...
I am saying include...
Clone Wars.
8 movies.
Yes.
Where does this movie we watch today? I think this is an important part of our conversation. That's why I'm bringing this up now, rather than the ratings portion of this episode.
It's such a separate event.
I know.
I would consider it almost an honorable, dishonorable mention, where it's kind of a side category. It's not as bad. It would probably be either above Phantom Menace, and then it would go, I would say, second half of Return of the Jedi, followed by New Hope and The Force Awakens, probably rank there on second, and then Empire Strikes Back and the first third of Return of the Jedi are probably
all right.
What I would
say. So you put a lot of asterisks next to that.
Yeah.
But what I am hearing you say is that you think this movie is better than episodes 2 and 3.
Yes.
And probably better than episode 1.
Only because so many of their elements are taken from something that's out of canon, but a lot of thought and a lot of character work went better into this series than it did anything
else. Emmy?
Okay, so I'm going to be a bit of a cheater here, but so basically, oh gosh, it's such a hard question. My ranking, starting from the worst, episode 1 is the worst, in my opinion, followed then by episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, followed then by episode 2. Then I would put Clone Wars there.
Mm.
And then I would kind of, I would probably put Force Awakens above Clone Wars, and then all the OGs are just kind of tied for... I mean, all of the OG ones. It's hard for me. Yeah, it's hard for me to rank the original trilogy. That I think that was the biggest struggle.
Yeah.
It's easy for me to rank our prequels.
I think there's sections of it. Yeah. And
yeah.
We can all agree that the prequel, that most of the sections of it are pretty bad, so we can rank it lower. But
well, and the thing is, it's like the original trilogy has a flow to it that I almost just in my mind think of it as like one thing.
Yeah.
One like cohesive.
I've consumed it that way so many times that it's hard not to.
You have to watch it basically.
So for me personally, you know, it'll change a little bit from day to day. But today I'm going to tell you, for me it is episode two. I can't believe I'm saying this. It's episode two, episode one, then Clone Wars, then Revenge of the Sith, just barely.
Really?
Then Jedi, New Hope, Force Awakens, because I'm a member Barry, yeah, and Empire Strikes Back. So I got to say, I like this movie better than episode one, episode two. I don't even have to think about it. And it's right there with Revenge of the Sith. As we revisit Revenge of the Sith, I might just barely change my opinion on that. But it's close. And so I just wanted to get the ball rolling on this, that we're going to admit that when people hate on this movie, it has an 18%, I believe, on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I just saw 18%.
And yet, like, episode one has like a 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think you got to talk about it like it's on a similar level and maybe even better than parts of the prequels.
I'm just so indifferent to it that it's not that it ranks higher because it's better. It's just that it doesn't inherit such a volatile reaction that the prequels do.
I respect that. But see, that's how I feel about episode two. I almost feel like in episode two, because I have, like I said previously, I have almost no connection to episode two from a nostalgia standpoint.
Yeah.
And I like this better. So let's get into this movie. The basic plot of the movie is that the Clone Wars have begun. The Clone Wars have. And they are in the process, the Republic are in the process of trying to make stronger trade routes.
Yes.
And they have found out that Jabba the Hutt's son has been kidnapped and that it's possible that rescuing him will result in expanding some trade routes.
This is an opportunity for them to have the Outer Rim.
Yes.
Which is a huge deal.
They are trying to establish some ties to Phantom Menace and, you know, trade routes and disputes and also...
And thematically, all the way up till A New Hope. And actually Return of the Jedi, because Jabba the Hutt's a factor in it.
Exactly.
And he does look younger, which I think is pretty cool. We also are introduced to the idea that Anakin has been falsely assigned a Padawan learner, Ahsoka Tano. It was supposed to be Obi-Wan Kenobi, and the Jedi Council decided ultimately that it would be a better fit if she was assigned to Anakin Skywalker.
Jedi Council or the producers of the movie?
A little bit of both. Well, remember we talked about this the other day, that we have this kind of theory that George Lucas and or the producers kind of view themselves as the Jedi Council.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about the movie. What did you guys like? What do you dislike? What do you think about it?
I feel that... I have mixed feelings, but I think the most important thing that this movie does is it fleshes out the characters that needed to be fleshed out, such as Anakin.
Anakin is at his most mature in this film.
And, well, and also,
yes, I kept saying that over and over again as I was rewatching this, that Anakin is more mature in this than he is in any of the prequel films, and it's not even close.
And Obi-Wan is charming.
Yes, every now and then he crosses into a little bit too sassy for me, but ultimately he is very charming. I love this scene.
Smarming.
There is this really big battle that goes on early on where they are...
almost right out the gate. There's a big battle.
Yeah, well, worth mentioning, this is the only canon Star Wars film that does not start with the signature Star Wars crawl. Instead, there is a voiceover. I believe this was done because it was ultimately aimed at kids.
Well, Lucas... This is all a part of his 1930s radio broadcast vibe. So it basically, it's like, the war effort continues.
I agree, but I wouldn't be surprised if that decision was still ultimately made because it was aimed at kids, because there's another big decision coming up later that
kids,
I know
George
for sure
Lucas
was.
His age, yes.
Well, so I do think it's interesting that it starts with that, because I do think that you're right, it does have like news around the world today. Mm-hmm. And I think the movie would be better if it did just straight up open on the Jedi Council talking about the trade routes and then go straight to this battle. The battle is on...
Christophsis.
Christophsis. Thank you, Emmy.
I actually remembered that purposely.
Yes, it's on Christophsis, which is a pretty cool prismy-looking planet. They definitely are playing with the word crystal. It has kind of a pinkish sky with these cool kind of slate-colored structures that are very sleek. A little bit like the structures on Kamino,
but it's
definitely not as stormy or watery.
Well, and something I noticed about the battle scene that was, like, most astounding to me was I almost felt like the battle scenes in this movie were more violent than I expected.
So this is what we come up.
So to show where the sausage is made just a little bit, Emmy did not rewatch this with Chaz and I, but Chaz and I watched it together. We usually all three watch stuff together if we can, but that's so funny that you say that because Chaz and I kept saying, are the battles in this movie more shocking and more powerful than the battles in episode 1 and 2?
Literally,
they are.
They are.
They're more atmospheric. They, like, the movies are just so clear and just so, like, they wanted you to notice every little detail, but this used a lot of, like, battle fog, and, like, there's haze, there's smoke,
there's scout clone troopers with camouflage armor.
And I almost felt this, like, weird, like, connection to the clones, like, oh, God. Like,
they seem so much more human,
which is so silly, because they're cartoons, but somehow this movie's accomplished to make the clones so much more human.
Well, everything's cartoon in this, so that also, once it establishes that everything's cartoon in this world, also, the Separatists, the robots, are finally look like a threat.
They,
like,
look so scary for the first time ever. I feel like it was the last episode that I made the joke that the movie's called Attack of the Clones, and it sounds like this cheesy sci-fi B movie. Yeah. This is finally pulling off a move that justifies that title. Like, it's like The Day the Earth Stood Still, Night of the Living Dead.
All the robots are goose-stepping in order.
Yes!
And that's the thing, like, later on, you know, when you see them as individuals, like, they make jokes like, Roger, Roger, I'm not doing it, you do it. Like, they're all cowards, and they're all real. It's like, you can't make, you either make them this wall encompassing monolith of a threat, or you make them comedic jokes that the Jedi tear apart.
That cheapens it, but I do feel like this movie does more of the former than the latter. I feel like there are more moments where the droids actually look scary to me. Yeah. One of my favorite parts, I think it's a little bit later on, is when a super battle droid grabs a clone trooper by the arm, holds him up, and then uses his blaster to shoot him in the gut.
Yeah.
And the clone trooper falls dead. That is one of the 15th or 20th goriest deaths in all of Star Wars canon.
I know.
That's awesome.
It's
like a Mortal Kombat fatality.
It was. I was stunned by it. I mean, in a good way. I think that it was cool to see, like, a battle that was, like, actually, like, emotionally giving me an impact.
I think they do a really good job to try to do a little bit of a Saving Private Ryan thing where, like, Commander Cody and Rex are kind of given a little bit of personality. Rex's helmet and Commander Cody's helmets look a little bit different from
another. Can I say something?
Sure.
Cody and Rex. Who named these guys?
Well, I feel George Lucas named these guys. Commander Cody is actually a character in episode 3. He is name checked in episode 3. And
I feel like they're named after either his kids or some fans.
And also,
like,
they're
from the night.
I agree with that. They are nicknames. Every clone technically has a serial number. This is explained as we dive into the TV series. I feel you. The names are a little bit cheesy.
Well, because all the other characters of Star Wars are like Obi-Wan, Padme, Leia. I mean, well, I guess
Shmi.
Luke. I guess you could say Luke is a normal name.
Yeah, Plo Koon.
Well, yeah, but like,
Ben and Shmi, but it's
Asajj Ventress.
Yes, yes, and they all have these, like, really sci-fi names. Then it's like, oh, and here's Cody and Rex.
So we are talking about this first big battle, and there is one big element we're not talking about, and that is one of my 5 favorite Star Wars canon characters, Ahsoka Tano. This was not my first time watching this movie. I think this is my 4th time watching this movie. Have you guys seen it before?
No.
This was my first time.
This was in...
Wow, and you guys really ranked it that high on your lists, even though this is your first time?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, my question is, have you guys seen... How have we not talked about this officially? Have you guys seen the Clone Wars TV series?
Last year when we started podcasting, I watched the first season.
So you've seen about 20 episodes. You've seen parts of it?
I've seen handfuls of episodes.
This is an awesome question to ask you guys then. Oh, virgin ears. Okay, so what do you guys think about Ahsoka Tano? And tell me, and be honest, because I know what happens to her. So I know who she becomes. You guys won't offend me. What do you guys think of Ahsoka Tano just from what you've seen of her today?
I think, and I wrote this down, I really feel like she's another plot device for Anakin, like a character that's yeah. like put there essentially to like just be used for Anakin's development because mm-hmm. holy crap, like she challenges Anakin yeah. more than any other person has.
I agree. So do you mean that in a good way or a bad way? Because I feel like when you said it, I took it personally and I was like, back off Ahsoka, man. But
no,
I think you actually meant
thing.
It in a good way.
I really, well, truly think it's a good thing because it's almost like the way she talks to him
mm-hmm.
is the way he talked to Obi-Wan.
Exactly.
I love that, right?
Literally no, the exact same way. And I feel like you're seeing...
It's what shows his maturity. Yes. It shows that he has grown.
Yeah, you're seeing this kind of like progression inside. Side of him where he's like starting to grow up throughout the movie, which is strange.
Yes.
And I think that that's important because the prequels always see is like whiny, yeah. You know, two dimensional, nothing really.
Yeah.
I think Ahsoka Tano makes Anakin more likable.
I totally agree.
She is his foil, definitely is meant that to annoy him and show him a contrast of how not to act as a Jedi in a lot of ways. I wrote down in my notes when she comes up, the buddy cop comedy, because the first thing they ask is like, we didn't think you took Padawan, sir. And he's like, I don't. Like, I'm not taking a partner again.
It definitely draws from the buddy cop comedy. I think very much self-aware doing so. Whether or not it lands is questionable.
But, yeah, it is interesting to see that they are definitely trying to make Anakin more mature. And also, as we see later on, that you mentioned it, that they have kind of, their solutions for things are very singular. Like, something I can do to
solve
this
situation. Chaz and I were talking about this while we were, right after we finished watching it.
Meanwhile, Obi-Wan has always been more of a group-minded. Like, he's aware of everything around him that's going on. While Ahsoka and Anakin are very singular in their thoughts about solving
yes.
the problem.
And like, we see it happen in this movie, and we'll see it happen even more in the series, but like when Ahsoka accidentally trips all of those sleeping droids that are sort of like landmines, only instead they come out and they're physical droids that Chaz, you pointed out, they sort of look like soda cans
mixed with
microphones, right?
They're trying to destroy the shield barrier, and then he's like, don't rush ahead, and she... rushes ahead and trips over the antennae, the laser signals that raise up these machines that, yeah, you said looks like a ribbon mic, but they've got, their eyes look like a soda can tap.
It's so cool.
On top.
The
so,
design is awesome, I just, thought.
So, I have a thing that I noticed.
Wait, are you moving on past Ahsoka?
No, I'm still on
her. Okay, good, okay.
I'm still on her. First of all, her instincts are astounding. Mm-hmm.
I love
Jedi
that they
training,
show that.
She, I mean, it's very obvious it's a raw instinct.
Yeah.
Oh, she's very raw. She's unpolished.
Very, very, very raw instinct, which is important because it's nice to see a Padawan with raw instinct that you know needs polishing, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a great element
thing,
to the
yeah.
story.
This is
well,
what we've been missing from Anakin and Obi-Wan's
it's
story.
What we've been missing from the
yes.
prequel trilogy.
Yes. So the other thing, she mentions, like, people keep mentioning how young she is, too young to be mm-hmm. a Padawan. Wasn't Anakin's problem he was too old to be a Padawan?
He was too old to start becoming a Jedi.
Yeah.
So,
he was too old to become a youngling. So you become a youngling, and then when you are primed, you're ready to become a Padawan. That's a very good question.
But here's the thing. Like, she literally has the opposite problem of Anakin. Like, she's like...
It is inversed,
she's
definitely.
She's like starting her training for her Padawan training.
Very early.
Too early?
Prematurely.
And he started his... too late without the youngling experience.
Yes, but then what's cool about that is that that actually kind of means that they're like sort of closer in age in a way.
Yeah, that's kind of I found that a little fascinating that was a conscious choice that they made. Like, oh, like she was just a youngling.
Yes,
people keep calling her youngling. She's too young to do this.
So Ahsoka does one thing in this movie that I hate, mm-hmm. and Anakin jumps right in with her. And I'm just curious to see if you guys hate it as much as I do, because I do ultimately dig this movie a lot. So, she calls Anakin Skywalker Sky Guy. And I think that is the laziest first draft poo-doo that I can even think of.
Yeah.
What in the world? I swear to you, as a writer, when I'm writing something and I think to myself, oh, she needs to come up with some kind of sarcastic nickname for him. What is it going to be? I can't think of something. His last name's Skywalker. I'll put Sky Guy. That is some first draft nonsense.
Yes.
They made it into the final draft of this Hollywood feature film. Do you guys hate that as much as I do?
Yeah, also...
I hate Sky Guy, and then he calls her Snips.
Why?
Because he says, don't be so snippy with me.
Oh, my God.
And I actually... I think that's annoying, but I'm actually more okay with Snips than I am with Sky Guy.
Really?
Snips, Stinky, and Sky Guy.
Well, I like, Stinky's my favorite nickname.
Stinky,
but...
I'm okay with because it shows how like what a kid she is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here's why I'm okay with... And I don't like Snips.
I don't like
here's
Snips.
Here's why I like Snips more than Sky Guy. Is that Snips, you didn't understand why Snips. Snips
no.
was at least smart enough that you didn't, like, not to condescend to you at all. Is it like, it was at least, I shouldn't say smart enough, but enough thought went into Snips that you just now realized why it's Snips. Whereas, like, if you hear Sky Guy, you halfway through Sky Guy, you go Skywalker. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm more okay with Snips. And I also like it a little bit better because Anakin... doesn't call her Snips nearly as much as she calls him Sky Guy. He mostly calls her Ahsoka. And when he calls her Snips, he's saying it to her like in this, like, I'm your dad kind of way.
Yeah.
It's sort of like kiddo. And I would have preferred if he just called her kiddo or something like that.
Now
or kidster. Oh, wait. That's the name of...
that's
somebody's name.
Kidster.
Now we get to see how Anakin would have acted as a dad.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Oh, we do. And that's one of the reasons why he finally seems mature. So I'm glad you guys are on the same page ultimately with me.
Ow, my heart. That
I know.
Really
oh,
hurt.
I know. I know. So I'm glad to see that you guys are kind of on the same page with me as on Ahsoka. I can't wait to watch her grow before your eyes. This is weird. What's happening? Oh, I feel like such a dad right now. So one thing that's kind of cool and weird about this movie is that because it is setting up this TV series, mm-hmm. all movies, all good movies, Chaz pointed out, have a three-act structure. And
not always necessary.
It's not a golden rule, but it's written in a very, very heavy-handed pencil.
Yeah.
So what's cool about this movie is that its three-act structure actually breaks almost perfectly to three 30-minute episodes.
Yeah.
The first episode is this cool battle on, what was the name of the planet again, Emmy?
It's Christophsis.
Christophsis. And introducing Ahsoka as the Padawan. The next one is the rescue of Rhoda the Hutt. And then the third one is the climax where all the points mix up. So now we're moving into the second one where we get to the rescue of Rhoda the Hutt. So basically what happens is there is this big battle. Ahsoka and Anakin save the day. Then there's a really cool scene where Obi-Wan Kenobi is trying to talk about like the terms of defeat.
Okay.
Yeah. And he stalls
what
it out.
What the heck is the name of the weird jawed character?
The Scottish dude.
What? Who is that? They never say his name, and he's
they
like,
don't ever say his name.
Never.
But he gets. That's what we noticed at first. That this voice actor Tom Kane, he plays the narrator in the beginning of the story. He's also the army commander, and then he's also the enemy.
Tom Kane, and get ready for it. Tom Kane is the Mel LeBlanc, the Dan Castellaneta, the Billy West of this series.
I was just going
and
to
he's
say,
Yoda.
I have written down.
He's Yoda too.
I have written down reusing voice actors for multiple characters.
Yeah.
Are we okay with that?
Oh, I love it as I love The Simpsons. I love Futurama. I love South Park. I love Rocky and Bullwinkle. I love Looney Tunes. I love that. I think it's cool when you're watching something and you're realizing like, oh my gosh, the same guy who voices that character is voicing that character. Yeah. I think it's fun.
Here's my only problem. I don't feel like there's enough distinction in his voice.
Interesting.
Between characters.
And that's why it kind of
bothered the only
me.
Reason it bothers me.
But did you
me.
Know he's Yoda too?
That's what I didn't know.
See, you didn't know he's Yoda. So I hear what you're saying, but he does so many voices that some of the voices he's doing, you don't even realize he's doing it.
Yeah.
So like,
he's Professor Utonium.
Because
he's Professor Utonium from the Powerpuff Girls.
See, I have no problem with reusing voice actors.
No.
But my problem was
the lack of range.
Yeah, the lack of range. I felt like I just kept recognizing the same voice actor over and over and over and over.
I would argue that
what Ben was
Tom
saying,
Kane's range gets better as the series goes on.
Okay.
What Ben was saying about the three-act structure, but it feels like separate episodes. This film feels like this was a test pilot that got developed a lot more than intended. And so some of the voice work feels like it's okay. Like, they actually got some of the original voice actors back.
Christopher Lee is Count Dooku in this movie. Mace Windu is played by
Samuel Jackson.
Tupac Shakur.
A very It's a very Samuel lethargic.
They got Tupac.
It's Samuel Jackson, but L is for lethargic. I feel like he's very low energy
Samuel
in this.
Samuel lethargic Jackson.
And there was one. Palpatine is played by the same.
He's not. I checked. Okay. I actually thought he was.
The voice sounded different to me, but you were saying.
I think it's Ian Abercrombie.
But Anthony Daniels is back as C-3PO.
Yes, that's correct.
For some reason, Natalie Portman didn't do this, though. I don't know why.
Christopher Lee did it.
But a lot of this, the animation and things like that, are very much. I said Archer-esque, where it's like they emote a lot with like eyebrows and like nostril twitching and like maybe like some jaw movement. But it's not very high. It's adequate animation, but it's definitely you feel like they're testing it up and then they polished a lot of it for a show or a pilot for a release.
Right. For those of you who don't know, Chaz is an incredibly gifted visual artist. His hands do wonderful, wonderful things.
Oh, God.
And
phrasing.
He's seriously, though, in all seriousness, he's wonderful. And so, Chaz, talk nerdy to me about the animation of this film. That's a big part. This is the one non-live action official canon Star Wars film. Talk nerdy to me about some animation.
Well, this is one of the first shows that started into the foray of 3D CGI animation for TV shows.
Sure. I mean, at this point in time, I mean, this is coming out not that long after
2007.
I think it's 2008.
It's
08. So, it's developed in 2007, then maybe even late 2006.
The earliest version of maybe CGI animation TV shows would have been like Beast Wars, Transformers, or like.
Right, which were definitely outliers. This is coming out before this is the average thing to do, is what you're trying to say.
Yes. It's an experiment. You can tell by a lot of the textures that they use, like it's very kind of an airbrush thing where they're still kind of figuring out the tone and the look of it. A lot of these designs are based on Genndy Tartakovsky's version, as we said.
Sure. So this is a good time. Chaz, I know this is your passion project. I know that sadly that this wonderful, beautiful series that I recommend with my whole heart was shot out of the canon. This is your one time on the show where I'm just going to let you talk about the
Not the one time.
And also, I'm not the boss. I don't know why I said it. I'm going to let you talk about
maybe
it.
Maybe a minisode
but
at some
you
point.
You have my, as the nerdiest guy in the room, you have my blessing to talk about this non-canon Star Wars thing for a sec, because it really shapes what we saw here.
Yeah. The design of it, it's all based on the same man who designed Samurai Jack and Dexter's Laboratory, and he was a focus
and Powerpuff Girls
on...
I see this.
And a recent run of Luke Cage comics, which is fantastic.
Wow, okay,
and,
I see that now. Yeah.
But his style, it's very kinetic. His style, and he did a miniseries, which was basically like 5-minute... series of 10 minisodes that spanned across 2 seasons.
It was on the Cartoon Network. It aired in between episodes of other Cartoon Network original series.
And it spanned between episodes 2 and 3. And this was the original bridge of the Clone Wars that led up to the beginning of...
Before
Revenge of
the Episode 3 actually came out.
And it explains why Palpatine is kidnapped in the beginning. It also establishes the threat of Count Dooku. General Grievous.
Yeah.
General Grievous is this terrifying Jedi.
And Asajj Ventress is introduced into it, correct?
Exactly.
And Cad Bane. And I also want to mention that this is interesting because this movie and consequent series that we watched today, this all happened ex post facto because George Lucas basically decided that the Genndy Tartakovsky series didn't go into great enough detail about the Clone Wars and that it needed to be stretched out to something bigger.
Exactly. And so... You definitely see that they're trying to translate his smooth action style, which is fantastic, and it beautifully shows the power of the Force in his series and his miniseries and everything else. But the animation is a little stiff. I would say it reminds me a little bit of DreamWorks more than it does Disney animation at the time.
Yeah, this looks a lot like, and I mean this in a pretty good way. Ultimately, it looks a lot like Shrek, I feel like.
Yeah. It's blocky. It's their learning kind of how movement works, where a lot
of
animation...
It does not look like Pixar.
Animation for Disney is a lot about giving things gravity in a bubble, so that way when something moves, it wiggles. Like, it has an equal and opposite reaction. Someone stops, they don't just completely stop. These characters are still learning to even move separate pieces of their body. there's something called motion capture that happens a lot in films now, where like basically they put balls, motion capture
somewhat pioneered by Peter Jackson in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, right?
And so this animation, maybe there's a little bit of it, but it's mostly more of a puppeteering kind of animation where they're moving one part at a time.
I think that's very true.
And trying to move it. So this is all like a very young team, a very like people who have a lot of influences to handle. Not just Star Wars, but Gendy's influence. And you can tell they're just trying to test a lot of things out. And so I don't fault them for learning. It's just definitely, you can tell it's a growing pains process.
Speaking of young people, I do want to talk about someone who is near and dear to my heart, who's going to become the MVP and absolute all-star of the Clone Wars, and that's Dave Filoni. He's the director of this film, and he is the executive producer slash co-creator of the Clone Wars series. He's the co-creator of Star Wars Rebels, which is one of my absolute favorite things. Star Wars, if I had to do a power rankings of Star Wars, Clone Wars is pretty high, and Rebels is probably just below Empire for me as the second best thing ever. I love Dave Filoni. Before he had done this, he had basically had a couple of jobs in animation working for King of the Hill and for The Oblongs. Okay. And then after that, he was the director of several episodes of Avatar: The Last Airbender, a wonderful show on Nickelodeon. Oh. Then he got this gig, and he has since inherited the keys to the company car and has really left a wonderful impression on the Star Wars universe. Yeah. I will tell you more about him as we get into the Clone Wars series, because I own it all on Blu-ray, and there are all sorts of awesome commentary nuggets that I'm geeking out and can't wait to tell you.
Yeah.
But let's move on with the plot of this movie, okay?
Yes. Can we take a moment? You had mentioned the part where Obi-Wan sits with the unnamed weird jawed alien. And,
right. Talk about terms of surrender.
Terms of surrender.
Terms of surrender.
This.
Yes.
This was a moment where I was kind of like, okay, Obi-Wan, you're charming. Like, I don't know. I got a little attracted to him.
I found him very charming there. It's interesting to get the female perspective on that, because I agree. I was like,
I mean, not to be like, you know, take it to a gross level and be like, I was attracted to that cartoon.
But I kind of was.
But I like kind of was. I was.
I'm not afraid to, like, Jessica Rabbit gets my motor running. I'm not afraid to admit that. So yeah, exactly.
There was this moment. He's like, he's just standing there so calm, and he just brings over these rocks, and he's like, all right, let's talk.
Yeah,
like,
he's so powerful.
He winks at the
dude. He winks at him.
We're just working out negotiations, aren't we? Wink. And he's like, how dare you flirt with me? Dang.
And my heart just fluttered.
I thought he was wonderful.
I really
curse your glorious beard, Obi-Wan.
Well, I thought that was a great Obi-Wan moment because, you know, he's very often just like a serious, angry dude.
Sure, sure. But he's not actually. Exactly,
like,
exactly.
In the live action, he's like this serious, angry dude.
Doesn't he have a girlfriend in this?
We see Obi-Wan in love in Clone Wars. It's
Are you kidding?
It's so good. I love Clone Wars. I'm so excited for this.
You're kidding.
If the Force hadn't gotten in, the Force has cock-blocked Obi-Wan, apparently.
Oh my God.
He would have seduced anyone. Like, he would have.
He's so charming.
Yeah.
The droids you're looking for.
Oh man, if I met Obi-Wan,
so
these are the droids you're looking for. This
so,
is my hotel room.
So we cut to Jabba's palace on Tatooine. It's pretty cool. This is where the story does. Speaking of Obi-Wan, deviates a little bit where Obi-Wan's going to kind of do his thing, and Ahsoka Tano and Anakin are going to kind of do their own thing. Happens a lot in the Clone Wars series. This does a good job of setting us up for that. Anakin is now training his own Padawan. That's important. So we get a little bit more information about how Jabba's Punky Muffin has been kidnapped. Punky Muffin is officially Star Wars canon. And
basically the Sith have kidnapped Roka the Hutt, and they're using him.
But not the Sith. That's where this all gets dumb and weird.
The Separatists.
But not Dooku, the Separatists. It's actually like terrorists basically have kidnapped it.
And they're gonna frame the Jedi so that way Jabba will align with the Separatists.
That's what's actually happening. Yes, that's correct. The Separatists.
That's the evil plan in a nutshell.
Quick question.
Yes.
How old is Jabba? I mean, like once we start getting into,
I feel like, you know, in human years, I feel like he's supposed to be like in his like 40s? Late 20s, early 30s in this,
really?
And then by the time we get to him in Jedi in human years, he's probably like 60-ish. And I think that lines up well, because I feel like he is a, like, Brando-esque Godfather 1 with a little more vitality.
Yeah.
Right? In episode 6.
I think that's giving him a little bit too much class.
Well, sure. More like Brando in the Isle of Dr. Moreau, where he has the weird water thing on his head.
Also, but that, on the Jabba note.
Yes.
Did you guys watch this with captions?
No, did you?
Yes, I watched everything.
Did you get to see Jabba's dialogue?
No, this was what I was going to say that kind of had me a little flustered. And maybe this is just a new discovery for me.
Wait, are you about to say you're attracted to Jabba?
Yes, no.
That deep booming voice.
God, no.
That butt chin.
So, I watch everything with subtitles. I just want to put that out there right now for any viewers. I watch everything with subtitles. It's really important.
We
to
get
me.
It. You're literate. Stop holding it over our heads.
Or hearing deficit. I don't know.
Well, it's just I feel like I get panicked and feel like if I miss something, it's like horrible. I
have get
to
that.
Go back.
Yeah.
So, but anytime Jabba would talk, in parentheses, it would say speaking Huttese.
Just reminding you.
Huttese.
No, yeah, Huttese is in. I'm a giant nerd. I'm sure that is news to some of our listeners. But yeah, Huttese is the name of
the language.
That's so
language.
Lazy. Because then, you know what happened when the Jawas came on? They were speaking Jawaese.
I do feel like most of the languages in Star Wars, you're right.
Lazy.
It is mostly ease or ish.
That'd be
but
like,
at the same time, I dare you to name, other than French and German, which are named after the countries they're from, name a language that doesn't end with like, ISH or ESE.
Yeah, that's true.
To be fair, they're trying to make it an allegory for our own world.
As far as tied to
to
the actual name of the country with ease, you mean like Catanese?
That's yes, exactly. I mean, like most of our languages are tied to the
culture
country,
of the
country or culture of origin with an ease, an ISH, or an N at the end.
Also,
I hear you.
Also,
I hear
though,
you,
with the captions, I was a little bummed that I didn't like get to see what he was actually saying.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, right? So. Jabba doesn't have any subtitles at all.
No.
And I think that's because this movie is aimed at kids, and we will get at that in just a little bit. So we cut to the planet Teth, where Rhoda is being held captive. There's a really cool battle, I think, that happens vertically. I think it's a wonderful set piece.
Yeah.
There is this, it's not even a mountain. It's just
a
straight
rock
up
cliff.
Rock cliff pillar
precipice
thing. And there's a precipice is a good word for it. And there is, so there's this walker tank crawling up it with tow cables. And I think there's a fun scene between Anakin and Ahsoka where it's a little bit like Gimli and Legolas from
Lord of the Rings,
The Two Towers, where they're kind of, Legolas kills the Oliphant and Gimli's like, that counts as one. And they're racing to the top and slaying battle droids. And then Anakin gets to the very top and he says to himself kind of out loud, showing how mature he is. He goes, I wish you would have stayed close to me, Ahsoka. And then a tank blast happens and saves him. And then she says, I can't get much closer, and then ruins it with Sky Guy. Mm-hmm. But I did think the battle's really cool. And then they head into this monastery where Rhoda is being held. The clone troopers have really cool lights on the outside of their helmet, which is awesome because a huge science fiction pet peeve of mine is in movies.
Lights in the helmets.
Lights inside the helmets happens all the time. One movie that is coming to mind is Prometheus.
Yeah.
It looks cool, but it doesn't make any sense. That wouldn't help you see better.
It's a movie thing to more light up the face than it is.
Sure, and I get it, but it drives me nuts. And so that's why it's cool for animation, because they actually get to be more practical because it's animated. Mm-hmm. We do find out that Asajj Ventress, who is Count Dooku's apprentice, is here and ready to strike.
Yeah.
And they are able to rescue Rhoda the Hutt, who Ahsoka very quickly after
they're
dubbed
trying,
Stinky.
Yeah. The Asajj is trying to film them rescuing it, making it look like it's a kidnapping, so
exactly.
That way they can rescue it.
Sends it
later.
Back to Jabba. Jabba gets mad, basically says, kill the Jedi Poodoo.
Yeah.
And so then we eventually Obi-Wan Kenobi catches up and we get a really cool lightsaber battle with Asajj Ventress and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah. That's
Here's
a good
my thing about
saber.
This movie. Yeah, oh yeah, with the moon in the background, they're on the bridge. It would be a great screensaver.
Yeah.
So stop me if I'm out of line. There are two major lightsaber battles in this movie. Obviously, there's a lot of lightsaber combat.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two major lightsaber battles, and that is Obi-Wan and Asajj Ventress and Dooku and Anakin rematch.
Yeah.
Right? I think both of these are cooler than any of the lightsaber battles and maybe even lightsaber action in episode 2.
Yeah. They're the most
thoughts.
They're the most reminiscent of Empire Strikes Back, where it's two solitary figures and it's more about psychological and physical strength combining.
Feels more like fencing, kind of, where it's...
And that's... I'm fine with fights being like that. Less about ballet and more
and
about...
bouncing off the walls.
Yeah, and more about physical intimidation.
Yeah.
I love that Anakin fights like Darth Vader from the original trilogy. Yeah. Ahsoka fights with this cool underhand style. Mm-hmm. Obi-Wan fights with this cool overhand style, where he kind of, like, holds his blade above his head and uses his other hand to kind of use the Force.
Yeah.
It's very guarded. It's such a wonderful detail. I'm so glad that it's in this movie. So, Anakin and Ahsoka escape with Rota the Hutt on this spice freighter. I thought
the end of the second act.
Basically the end of the second episode, more or less.
Yeah.
I think the spice freighter design is really cool. It doesn't totally make sense, to be honest, because it has
one large
two and a
wing
half wings.
And then a tiny wing on one side. So it's lopsided.
But I like it. And one of my favorite parts of it is that when they're on board, we're introduced to a cool part of Star Wars canon, which is like a holocron WebMD, where Rhoda is sick and Ahsoka has a hologram of a med droid come out and explain to her how to take care of a Hutt.
I loved that.
I thought that was an awesome touch.
I thought that was super cool.
It's a baby. How do we know it's the right Hutt?
So,
not all Hutts.
Don't be specious.
Don't be mad if I'm like totally, totally backtracking, but I want to take a moment to touch on something. We have a moment with the Jedi Council with Windu and Yoda discussing what needs to happen when, as far as battle goes.
Yes.
I thought it was totally fascinating to see the way Jedi handle a war.
Yeah.
Sure. Wow. Yeah, we actually, this is kind of the first time we see the situation room of Jedi war.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Well,
that's
because there
point.
Were moments where I was like, is that part of the Jedi creed, the Jedi compass of morals? There was moments where I was kind of questioning if they were
they're nice.
Going, if they were stepping out of their bounds of training for the sake of the war, for the sake of the general good.
Well, the overall...
Which is good and important, because that is one of the ethical arguments of the Clone Wars, is it a Jedi's place to get involved in a war like this?
Yeah, I was totally fascinated by some of the calls made by, like, Yoda, especially. Like, some of the calls Yoda made, I was like, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
the original trilogy very much leaves kind of the feeling and impression that the Jedi were sort of not monks, but more crusaders.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the next holy war. So definitely there's this line being blurred here.
Yeah.
Where are they getting too involved? Is this a true fight of the Jedi? Is this a crusade, or is this a battle that they've kind of been stuck in?
Kind of going off of that, I feel like in Asajj Ventress' battle with Obi-Wan, there is a moment where you see her commitment to the dark side that makes her so angry and fast and wildly swinging, and his cocky calmness where he grabs her wrists, and basically she would have won the battle if she would have stayed focused and not been so angry.
Yes.
It does a good job of showing the balance of the Force, that there is power in the light and in the dark.
He kind of, he smarms and charms and seduces his way out of...
His
lightsaber gets knocked away. He's like, well, I did have the advantage.
Like,
So we get to the third act. Ahsoka and Anakin land on Tatooine. They have kind of a conversation about how he's going home. We hear the sound of, like, Tusken Raiders being slaughtered in the background.
Well,
I think it's a really great moment.
The fight between him and Dooku happens.
The fight behind him and Dooku happens very shortly after they land. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It is.
And just, you know, Anakin's upset to be back on Tatooine so soon because, you know,
which
sand.
Which is
and
like,
not murdering an entire group of people.
Well, but this is like Zenicide. When you kind of like get a little peek-sees of, you know how you were talking about how Ventress was using a lot of fury and anger that was making her fighting skills a little sloppy.
Yeah.
And we get to see the way that Anakin combats with his lightsaber, but in his fight with Dooku, since it's on Tatooine, there's a lot of passion.
Sure, absolutely.
That fight, which is what makes that fight so good.
Yeah.
Is there so much passion in it?
Absolutely.
I do find it funny, though. While this is going on, basically, Dooku is still setting up so that way Ahsoka gets ambushed while trying to return the baby. Meanwhile, Padme is pleading with a character that.
Zero the Hutt. I guess we have to talk about Zero the Hutt.
But she. Basically. she finds out that the Jedi are being accused of kidnapping, that Anakin has been accused of kidnapping, killing a baby, and she's like, Anakin would never do that. And this takes place right after episode two.
The women, the younglings, all of them.
All of them. And she's like, she would never do that to, you know.
What? Two.
On Tatooine. I mean, not again.
Okay.
He wouldn't do
that
again.
So Zero the Hutt.
God. I literally wrote down, was meeting Zero the Hutt necessary? And then later I wrote, wait, what?
Zero the Hutt is awful. So Zero the Hutt was originally supposed to speak in Huttese. And mm-hmm. all the dialogue was supposed to be in subtitles, which yes. to me, if someone went through and re-edited this film and did that, then I think I would put it ahead of episode 3 in my power rankings almost for certain. Because Zero
I
the Hutt.
Just the slam drink.
Zero the
Hutt. Julep,
much like your sophomore English teacher, if you don't use MLA formatting, I drop your paper a letter grade. That's how I feel about Zero the Hutt. Come on. He's awful. So the problem is that he was supposed to speak Huttese, and this is actually true. I know we blame him more than I wish we did. It's so cliche for Star Wars fans to do this. George Lucas was an executive producer on this film, and it was his note that if this was going to be a movie aimed at all audiences, that we couldn't have a character that spoke in subtitles. So we needed to have Zero the Hutt talk, and specifically a George Lucas note, he needed to sound like Truman Capote, which is why he has a southern accent and a lisp.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Truman Capote, Tennessee Williams mixture of sorts.
Horrible.
It's absolutely horrible. I can't stand it. It's disgusting. It almost takes me out of the film. It almost makes me want to watch the scenes with Padme being so cool, escaping from
Padme. There is a reason that this scene is important. It establishes that the Hutts have a thing for Padme's family, no matter who they are.
They're into
generations
that type.
Later.
Sure. I mean, here's what I will say about, if I have to say something nice about Zero Hutt, I like that he has a black sun tattoo. I'm telling you, if you replace all of his dialogue where he talks like this, if you replace that with just, I like him fine, and I have no problem with
he
it.
He does for like 5 seconds. He goes that. When he's actually
talking to Jabba.
Bottom bueno.
Yeah.
Jabba.
Yeah. So Padme helps out in a big way. She's really cool. She definitely carries her coolness over from the end of episode 2 in the Coliseum and all that jazz. Yeah. Great with a blaster, breaks out of prison.
Tricks them, gets C-3PO to come in.
Ahsoka holds her own pretty well. Basically, while Dooku and Anakin are fighting, then Ahsoka is fighting some Magna guards.
Yeah.
And we realize that Dooku slashes Anakin's backpack. We think that Stinky, a.k.a. Roka the Hutt, is in there, and he's not. It's the old Hutt bag of rocks trick.
Ha!
Yep.
And they return Roka the Hutt, and
we're happy for Jabba that...
We're happy for Jabba, which is weird knowing what a scumbag he is. He ends up kind of becoming a hero in the end.
And
a really interesting line towards the end of this movie is, so basically after everything's kind of resolved, is that Palpatine and Dooku are talking, and Palpatine says, "The engines of this war turn in our favor," which I thought was a cool sci-fi twist on, like, you hear, like, the sails are turning in our favor and things like that, and instead it's spaceships, so the engines. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And then the John Williams score plays, and it makes me feel good,
because
a lot of the other score has been somebody else who...
You compared to Linkin Park.
There's, like, a lot of parts that's, like, battle scenes that sound like Linkin Park and, like, Evanescence.
Totally.
Like, it's like... "Wake me up, Jedi, fighting the dark side, save me from the Sith that I've become." Ba-da-ba-da. That's sort of what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Bit.
"Before my twins are born."
Yeah, it's weird.
I think that was maybe them playing into the whole, like, oh, it's 2008 and this music's hip.
It's dramatic and emo.
Except for it was 2008,
like,
so that music hadn't been hip for 4.5 years.
But it takes a while to make an animated film.
Yeah,
give them
that's
a
true.
Two.
That's fair.
So even 2 years after it was old, it wasn't old then.
Yeah.
So that's more or less
2008's The Clone Wars film. Do you guys have any other big things you want to add? I did miss a visual that I really liked, which was Asajj Ventress was fighting with two lightsabers, and Obi-Wan, there's a moment where she comes at him with both on top, and then he comes across the bottom with his, and it forms a triangle.
Yes.
And they kind of hold it for a second, and it's centered.
Yeah.
That was a really awesome visual.
I
got to tell you, the lightsaber battles in this movie were fantastic.
Solid Snake box sneak.
Oh, yeah. Anakin and Ahsoka do definitely pull a Metal Gear Solid, like the video game Metal Gear Solid. They sneak by the droid army in a box. That is a good point.
And then, my C-3PO comes and rescues everyone. He's a complete badass.
Wait.
I came to kick ass and process bubblegum, and I am unable to process bubblegum.
Yeah, that was it! Yes! I actually did think that was cool. It was like one of the few moments I actually don't hate.
Are you okay, Miss Padme?
Yeah, that was one of his most heroic moments, period. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, there was a moment in the beginning that I forgot to kind of touch on. They mentioned Grievous, and I was like, oh, yes! Because as you guys know...
Get ready. Grievous is coming big time.
That's my
Grievous
favorite.
Grievous is pretty great
villain.
In the Clone Wars series.
We are going to watch him anyway.
It's my favorite villain.
Yeah. So
Grievous can be really cool.
Anything else before we move on to the review portion of this episode?
No. Anything else? I just wrote down Buster Keaton moment where she collapses an entire wall and there's a single...
Oh, that moment's awesome. I'm glad you brought that up. There's a really great moment early on where Ahsoka, it's her save the cat moment. It's when she proves that she's got worth.
Yeah.
And she has accidentally tripped up all the soda pop cans / ribbon mic machines
all around Anakin.
He's about to die and there's a wall and she says don't move, which is a callback line, and he doesn't move and this wall falls through and there's a perfect hole in it so he doesn't die but all the droids die and she saves him with the Force. It's a pretty good moment and it makes you go like, this is Ahsoka chick, she's aight.
That was the moment that I was like, that raw instinct is there.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
that's, that's when you kind of are sold on her, for sure.
All right, so let's move on to the review portion of this episode. So, as always, we will be reviewing on a scale from Jar Jar Binks to Han Solo. We are reviewing how cool this entry in Star Wars canon is. Is it as lame as Jar Jar Binks, or is it as cool as Han Solo? Amy, where do you think this falls?
This falls for me on Clone Wars Anakin. An Anakin that actually is
That's
fleshed
perfect.
Out. An Anakin that is fleshed out, that has character development, and an Anakin that I can root for as an audience member for the first time in a long, long time since starting off our time here. So, this gave me some hope. A new hope. It gave me a new hope.
It gave you a new hope.
It gave me a new hope.
That sounds like a good movie title, I feel like.
Okay, I'll go for it.
Chaz?
This Clone Wars version of Yoda, where it's made some slight improvements to the original.
Ooh, I think Yoda looks good in this movie. We hadn't talked about that, but yeah, he looks good. The big eyes.
It feels better. It's maybe not as great as the original, but it can definitely has a chance to do its own thing, and it's a spin on the original, on its own version of things.
I think that's a great pick. So for me personally, I'm going to go with, because I'm a Star Wars nerdy hipster, I'm going to go with Plo Koon. Plo Koon is one of the senior members of the Jedi Council. He's a Kaldor. He's awesome. He gets expanded upon in the Clone Wars TV series. He is tragically murdered in the Order 66.
As many, yes.
Rest in peace. Aww. But I think that the reason he applies here is that I think he is worth taking your time to dig deeper into Star Wars canon to explore, because he's such a cool character, and while he doesn't have a prominent feature in the more accessible theatrically released live action films, he is well worth your time. I would check this out. It's on Netflix. It's free if you have a Netflix subscription, so I guess it's $9.99 if you don't have it. I would watch it. It's almost exactly an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
It's great. It's fun.
It's painless.
It's absolutely painless.
Painless, yeah.
I would rather watch
except for Zero. I mean, it's
then Zero is a little bit... Now that we've warned you, Zero is almost so cringeworthy that you'll laugh at it.
Yeah.
That's what we've got. Do you guys have anything to plug before we wrap up? We are moving forward with a short film called Post. Emmy is going to be acting in it. Chaz will be involved in some capacity. Our former co-host from the episode 2, Jacob Roberts, he is going to be directing it. I'm writing it.
It's going to be a
brace yourself.
It's going to be a great piece.
Anything else? Chaz?
Once again, just Stuff Buffalo Room. We do stage readings almost every month. This month is going to be Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless
Mind. That's right. You did mention that.
And then I'm not quite sure what the next project's going to be.
Sure. Amy's still asking people to...
As
to come
per
to
usual,
to
asking
Shock Treatment.
You to come check us out at Shock
and
Treatment.
Chaz and I have a new podcast in development that's going to be coming soon. We'll have details soon, so get ready for that. That's going to be exciting.
Yep.
All right, so we are moving on to the Clone Wars series next. We will be watching about 3 or 4 episodes per podcast episode. Start watching it now. It's on Netflix, so get a Netflix subscription if you don't already have one. We're not sponsored by Netflix, but like, why don't you have one or borrow your roommate's or whatever?
Yeah.
Watch it. Start watching it, and that way you can stay even with us. That's probably the most fun way to hang out with this. As always, I am Ben Wendt.
I am Chaz Kaufman.
And I am Emmy Panzica.
And May. I am Obi-Ben.
Oh my
God. You're not. Get out of here. May the Force be with you.